We'll be opening up phone lines at the bottom of this hour. If you have questions for our guest, Brandon Masullo, you can give him a call and tell us about your paranormal experiences. Maybe he can weigh in and give you some advice or ideas on what it is that you're truly experiencing or might be experiencing. Richard Estep will join us next hour for the final part of the show as we talk about his intensive research into haunted Gettysburg. From the ghosts of the Civil War soldiers and on, you're going to want to tune in and check that out. I also want to thank George Norrie and Lisa Lyon, Tommy Danizer for letting me talk about the Polar Plunge for Special Olympics. My son, Cliff Schrader, who is a veteran and a Minnesota firefighter here in the Twin Cities area of Minneapolis-St. Paul every year, goes out and helps raise awareness for the Special Olympics by doing something we call the Polar Plunge here in the north. This is where they'll cut a large hole in water and in the ice, and you dive into the hole and freeze, but you do it for a good purpose. We're raising awareness and money for the many Special Olympians out there that need help and financial aid in getting into the Special Olympics, their gear, their training, their travel expenses, and you can be a part of that. And how can you do it? Well, just email me, dave@darknessradio.com. I'll send you out a link. We mentioned this last night. I had about a dozen listeners from across the world send in requests for the link, and donations have been made. So thank you very kindly for that. Every penny goes directly to help the Special Olympics. So if you'd like to be a part of that, you can email me, dave@darknessradio.com, and be a part of the Polar Plunge Minnesota. We will live video stream that on my Facebook page when this occurs. I'll be jumping with my son in my old-timey swimsuit, and we'll be going together to help and raise awareness for the Special Olympics. So email me, dave@darknessradio.com, and give us a hand. Any size donation helps. $1, $5, $10. With the millions of listeners Coast to Coast has across the world, we should hit our $3,000 goal without even a second thought. Last year, our goal was $3,000. We hit almost $5,000 because of the listeners of Coast to Coast AM. So let's check it out and help us out again this year. dave@darknessradio.com. That's the way to reach out. Have you had a paranormal experience? Have you seen a ghost? Were you plagued by the paranormal growing up and it continues into your life now? What causes this? What can we tell about energy and electricity and the paranormal? Our guest, Brandon Masullo, will weigh in on that when we return. I'm Dave Schrader, and you're listening to the best in overnight talk radio. This is Coast to Coast AM. We're back. This is Coast to Coast AM. Brandon Masullo, our guest. His book, The Ghost Studies, New Perspectives on the Origins of Paranormal Experiences. For the benefit of our audience, can you kind of briefly describe what your book is about?
Yeah, sure. So The Ghost Studies is actually the first book I've ever written. And basically, I take it from a perspective of, I mean, listen, it's no mystery that science has pretty much dropped the ball when it comes to explaining these ghostly encounters. And oftentimes they're explained away as hallucinations, misinterpretations, and overactive imaginations. So the book really focused on individuals who've had these terrifying encounters, and they sort of struggle to find the answers. And sometimes they're left with, you know, reality television shows in a way to sort of describe these life-altering experiences. So there's millions of people who are looking for, you know, books and information that aren't just ghost stories and tales of haunted locations. And The Ghost Studies really combines the thrill of reading real-life ghostly encounters and also the satisfaction of new perspective and insights on the cause of these encounters. So in the book, I provide concise and encompassing theories, and they're based on data rather than faith or belief to explain these ghostly encounters that have sort of piqued our interest for the last hundred or for the hundreds of years. So what I have is these new perspectives on apparitions, hauntings, and communications from the dead. And what makes the book even more unique and appealing is not only its fresh theories, but it sort of tackles some flaws among some current theories on ghosts, which says that hauntings or reoccurring apparitions at locations with no historical evidence of tragedy or death. So there's a lot of those places where, you know, well, ghosts can't be here because there was no tragedy, no trauma, no death, nothing like that. So the book presents new research explaining why hauntings of apparitions of people who maybe never even resided at a location could be at a location. So really what the book is, it's a compilation of a lot of new theories. It's got the latest research on ghosts from parapsychology and other disciplines as well. And it also goes over a lot about EMFs, electricity, collective consciousness, entanglement, bioenergetics, and all the and the role that all those things play in ghostly encounters. So the book is a great, great way to get all the latest research and also some of my viewpoints on things.
Well, in the book, you introduce two new theories to kind of account for ghostly encounters. Tell us about what you're calling spontaneous apparitional trace theory or ghostly ingredients theory. Tell us a little bit about those, if you don't mind.
So ghostly ingredients theory sort of deals specifically with crisis apparitions or deathbed visions. For example, spontaneous ghostly encounters that occur at the same time as a relative or loved one is injured or dies. So on some random Tuesday night, you're sitting in your room, and all of a sudden a vision of your Aunt Julie appears, and she's glowing, and she says goodbye. And then you get a call the next day saying, Aunt Julie died about the same time you saw her. That would be a deathbed vision. So these crisis apparitions and deathbed visions are spontaneous cases. They're great ways to get a glimpse into the paranormal phenomenon because these cases usually are one-time occurrences of paranormal phenomenon, which for those of us who research the paranormal can sort of provide a wealth of information. And it also takes away some of that suggestibility. But in my opinion, there are fewer variables in these cases, which makes identifying the processes involved less complicated. So my view is that hauntings, apparitions, and ghosts are a combination of psychological processes, human energetic processes, and external environmental processes. So I believe that for a ghostly experience to occur, all these factors really need to be present. So when I say psychological processes, usually there's a starting point or a catalyst to these crisis or deathbed apparitions. And that's most likely it's a trauma or some emotional trauma or some life-threatening trauma. That sort of gets things going. And then when that happens, emotions affect us not only mentally, but it affects us internally as well. So it sort of causes these fluctuations in our internal bioenergetics, which triggers us to sort of reach out into the environment and communicate our stress or send almost these telepathic distress signals across the way, which are picked up by the receiver. And in the case I gave, it would be with the ant, it would be the person who witnessed the ant floating. So the ghostly ingredients theory sort of goes over these spontaneous cases. And then I have another theory in there called spontaneous apparitional trace theory. And that's my theory on residual hauntings for haunted locations, haunted houses, haunted hospitals, whatever. And what spontaneous apparitional trace theory really says is every haunted location, there's an individual who sent a telepathic distress call to someone who they were linked with that sort of stuck at that location. And this is what sensitives and ghost hunters are encountering at these locations. So this can account for a great deal of these apparitions there. And you may be thinking this theory is kind of similar to stone tape theory, place theory, or imprint theory. However, my theory differs from that one in that the haunting doesn't have to coincide with the location of the tragic event or location of the telepathic distress messages, but it could also occur at the destination or the end point of this message. So this can account for why apparitions of deceased people who never resided or visited a haunted location may appear there. So I take two looks at things. Number one, spontaneous apparitional trace theory, which looks at hauntings, and then ghostly ingredients theory, which looks at these deathbed visions or these crisis apparitions.
Crisis apparitions. I mean, that's a fascinating angle of this too, right? These moments. And what is your definition of a crisis apparition? And then I'll mention what I was thinking to see if they pair up.
Yeah, so crisis apparitions, they're basically, I'll give you an example. I'm sitting at home and, I get this vision of my wife and she's got blood coming down her head and her arm looks to be broken or something like that. And she's, an apparition in front of me and she's looking at me and she says, "Help me." I later find out that when I had that apparition, she was in a car accident, miles and miles away. So in this case, my wife didn't die. She was just in a crisis or a trauma, and she somehow sent some sort of communication, telepathic distress message to me, which I picked up in the form of apparition of her. So crisis apparition is different from deathbed vision in the sense that the person never passed away. It's more of a telepathic message than it is, you know, external communication from a spirit.
And that's kind of almost like this parapsychological link between people, right? I had that same thing happen with my mom 30 years ago on New Year's Eve when I kept passing my street and having visions of her collapsing, only to finally go home and have her collapse in front of me. It was this weird connection of what's the word I'm looking for here? A vision, if you will, that came to fruition. So, you know, there's that. Then there are a lot of these crisis apparitions where something appears to you to warn you prior to something negative or bad happening, maybe to clue you in or give you insight so that you're more prepared for those moments. All those aspects, and I'm getting funny emails. People are like, why do you keep debunking the paranormal? I want to hear that it's real. And well, I'm not, and neither are you, but we're looking at these things from a psychological aspect and viewpoint and parapsychological. I'm a skeptical believer. I've had experiences happen throughout my entire life in just about every weird vein you could imagine.
Yeah.
But I still question, where do these things come from? I think people give up the fact to realize just how powerful we as human beings really are and how great our mind and our consciousness and our brains really work. And I want answers, which I hope the audience wants as well. I'd like to get to the bottom of these things, like George Norrie mentions, and find out what's really working. Is it our brain working in conjunction with the supernatural and tapping into that plateau where these things exist? Is it our brain just simply projecting manifestations of our own wants, needs, and desires to help us deal with these situations? You know, I would love to find the answer for myself and for our listeners on these kind of subjects. That's why I love talking to somebody with your background. You're not just a parapsychologist or a self-proclaimed parapsychologist because you've read a few books. You've studied, you've gone into this field, and you have a clinical psychology degree, which means you know how the brain works, the mind works, and why we do and respect and or not respect, but experience things the way we do.
And I think that's an important thing to point out. You said it, you know, I'm by no means am I debunking anything that happens paranormal wise. You know, I my viewpoint is to look at things from different angles. So I think a lot of times people, the primary thought about ghosts is it's earthbound spirits or it's the deceased hanging around communicating with us, right? And if you don't have that viewpoint, then, you know, you're skeptical or you don't believe. And I don't believe that. I think when you have a ghostly encounter or a paranormal phenomenon, I think it's most like everything else in the world. There could be different explanations to it. If I hear a loud noise outside, it doesn't mean that, you know, it doesn't mean that it's, you know, one thing, it could be a million things. And the same with the paranormal. You know, if you have a ghostly encounter or a paranormal phenomenon, like, and I said this a little bit earlier, maybe if we look at all of them together, maybe earthbound spirits account for 30% of these ghostly encounters. But then there's 70% that don't account for earthbound spirits. Telepathy, psi hypothesis, imprint theory, residual environmental traces that we're picking up on. That doesn't have to be a ghost, but it's just as cool because it's, you know, in a sense, it's consciousness, you know, not ceasing to exist when we pass away. And that's the thing that's the most important that I hope most people get out of my book is this idea that, you know, consciousness may not be brain-based. It may be something that exceeds the brain, and it may be something that kind of lingers around. So ghosts don't have to necessarily be external beings. They could be just consciousness hanging around or us picking up on someone's consciousness or residual or whatever, telepathic distress signals. It's still pretty cool, even though it's not like an earthbound ghost or spirit. It's still pretty cool.
Do you have some insights? If people are looking to have a real or I guess perceived real paranormal experience, are there some ingredients that they should mix together to have that or that they would be more open to having something that we would consider supernatural?
I don't know. with my theory, I call it the ghost ingredients theory. In essence, what it is, it's a combination of things. So psychological process plus bioenergetics plus environmental equals paranormal phenomenon. It's tough to sort of do that consciously. Most paranormal phenomena, especially crisis and deathbed apparitions, happen because a number of these things line up. So, and usually emotional trauma or life-threatening events are the catalyst to this whole thing. And, you know, those aren't things that we can just sort of switch on, our emotional upheaval. It has to be something external that's sort of causing us to be overwhelmed emotionally or some sort of trauma that happens to us. And that's sort of the starting point to a lot of these phenomena. So if you have someone who's in a car accident or the plane is going down and then it blows up or whatever, then that life-threatening situation starts in motion a crisis apparition or a deathbed vision. I think there's people who are more prone to paranormal experiences, and we talked briefly about this before. These people are just more sensitive to the environment that's around them. Not psychic sensitivity or anything like that, just sensitivity to taste, sound, smell, weather, whatever. There's people who are more in tune to the environment. And I think these people are more prone to having these paranormal experiences. So you mix a lot of things together. And I think that's really when a paranormal phenomenon actually occurs.
Are they usually in heightened states when people have these kind of experiences, or do you find that, you know, I mean, because a lot of people that I hear, they're not even focused on it. They're watching TV when they have this thing move out of the corner of their eyes, or, you know, they'll hear footsteps down the hall and they may be getting ready to sleep. When does it seem most likely that we would experience something supernatural?
Yeah, usually it's when you're sort of at ease. So I've never heard someone having a paranormal experience or crisis apparition or deathbed vision when they're at a party or clubbing or something like that. Cause there's just too much going on. You're too overstimulated. It's usually when people are either alone, getting ready to go to sleep, or just relaxing, reading a book or something like that. So it's that calm meditative state, where you're sort of just at ease, or, you know, just calm. That's when these paranormal experiences tend to happen the most for people. And you'll see that across the research. And in some research studies, they try to get people in this meditative state in order to increase the likelihood of having something happen, whether it's telepathy or remote viewing or whatever. You don't put a person in a club and expect them to have a paranormal experience.
You know, I know in the book you talk about people who seem to be more prone to having ghostly encounters, and we're running out of time in this segment to talk about that, so we'll cover that in a little bit in the next, and we'll take the phone calls from our listeners. But, you know, I've found that a lot of times when I've been out at live events, it's sometimes the unwilling participants that seem to have the encounter. I enjoy nothing more than watching some wife who dragged her husband along on an event, and the husband ends up having something scary happen, and the wife gets all angry at the guy. Hey, you're not even the one that wanted to be here. Why didn't the ghost grab me by the throat? And the guy's like, I why is this happening? I didn't want this. I'm just here to placate her so I can go to Vegas for Super Bowl. And, you know, I get that kind of deal, and I've seen it from the other side too, where the husband is all geared up and excited about the paranormal and gets nothing, and the woman gets her hair tugged or sees something, and the guy's all irritable. And it's funny because, you know, here you've got people that didn't even come to have an experience, and they're the ones that seem to get that moment.
Yeah, that's cool. That's what's cool about the whole thing. You know, it's, you can't force it to happen. You can't sit down in a room and just will a paranormal or ghostly encounter to happen. You have to be, there's some stuff that has to go on internally that sort of resonates or links, and you have these types of paranormal phenomena. No one really knows the answers to it. You can find certain variables that make people more likely for that to happen, but there's no A, B, C, D, E, F, G happen.
Right.
Paranormal experience. That's what.
All right, we have to take a break. Brendan, hold tight. We'll start with phone calls and your emails when we return right here on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, thank you very much for listening and spending your evening with me here on the best in overnight talk radio. If you love the strange and supernatural, check out my show Monday through Friday. We look at the paranormal from a different angle. Sense of humor, education, enlightenment, and hopefully always entertained. You can check out Beyond the Darkness, the best in paranormal talk radio. A great companion to the best in overnight talk radio with George Norrie. You can check out our show at darknessradio.com. Go check it out for yourself right now. We'll continue with your calls, your emails, and our guest Brandon Masullo when we return to Coast to Coast AM. We're back. This is Coast to Coast AM. Brandon, we've got callers lining up all across the United States and around the world with questions, thoughts, ideas, and their own stories. You ready to start taking some calls?
Yes, I am. Looking forward to this.
Let's go west of the Rockies. Ron in Nevada, welcome to the show.
Hey, Dave. I'm actually from Minneapolis, but I'm out here in Nevada right now. And I have a couple of questions for your guest. I wanted to ask him was whether he feels like Richie Valens when his plane crashed in Iowa on February 3rd. In 1959, I believe it was. His wife said that she had a premonition that he should not get on a flight because she thought that something was going to happen to him and the Big Bopper and everybody that was on that plane. And then also, I just wanted to ask you really quickly, and I'll take this question off the line. And also, by the way, I've been listening to the show since 1994. But I also wanted to ask what his opinion was is on the widow of the Winchester, what he thinks about that with her making the rooms that led to nowhere and the doors that went to nowhere. And I'll try and let another caller get off.
All right. Get
into the line.
Thank you, Ron. We appreciate the call. What do you think about the premonition about Richie Valens and his death? Is that something that, that does seem pretty interesting, right? That people that are connected to us do seem to have almost this time travel ability because of their interconnectedness to our consciousness, our soul, our whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I actually never heard that before. The story about the plane crash and his wife. I never heard of that. It's pretty interesting. Yeah, I think usually whenever these telepathic messages are sent, it's almost always between people who we're emotionally linked with, like you said. And usually when you have some sort of emotional link to somebody, there's some sort of resonance or connection or entanglement or synchronization between the two people. And this is where information is actually passed. So in this case, obviously his wife and him were pretty emotionally linked and somehow... I don't know if she got the premonition. It sounds like she got the premonition before he got on the plane, or I'm not sure if it was while he was on the plane. I can't remember what he said.
Yeah, I know that Richie wasn't married at the time, but yeah, I think it might have been his mother or you know, he had always had the premonitions, too, about fear of flying and, you know, that whole aspect of it. So it is kind of interesting that, you know, you have that fear and then you're on the plane that goes down. That's got to be rough.
Yeah, that sort of premonition or precognition type thing is, they continue to study that nowadays. I mean, there's so much research out there about that, and I think anyone who's interested in that could look up Dean Radin, R-A-D-I-N. I think he has a new book coming out. He does a lot of that work on precognition, and he does a lot of research on that. It's really fascinating stuff. As far as the Winchester widow, I know that the movie just came out. Unfortunately, I haven't seen it yet. So she has a lot of rooms that are doorways to nowhere. Is that
well? Right. The whole idea, I guess, was Sarah Winchester, who is the heir to the Winchester rifle family, was told by, I believe it was a medium, that the ghosts of all the people that had died because of the guns and rifles that her family had created would always be kind of hunting her. And the only way to confuse them is to continually build on this house. and build stairways that go to nowhere, doorways that open to nothing, as if it was going to confuse. You know, it's something straight out of Hogwarts looking, right? With the way this house was constructed, and from the time she was told that till the time of her death, there was constant construction going on. And if things would settle down, and they would stop, you know, hammers would go flying, things would crash, there would be footsteps, cries, screams. There was all, I obviously, with Helen Mirren and this being a Hollywood movie, it's going to be amped up considerably for the scare factors. And you know, it's based on a true story, not necessarily based on a real person, but, you know, this is blown out by 1,000,000% in proportion to the actual story of what took place. But it is known to be extremely haunted.
Yeah, I know I've read about it in books about that, but I really don't know how to say much more to
right.
it. It's such a challenging one because I have so many questions about that. Like, why would that confuse ghosts?
I don't know. I don't know if it's because, you know, maybe it's the constant change of energy and the misdirection and. You know, we do so many things in superstition to believe that it works, and then you start to wonder, what is the placebo effect? Is it the idea that if I do this, it'll keep the ghosts distracted? Just like, you know, is really waving a stinky stick of you know, smudge stick in the air going to clear a ghost and make it go away? How does smoke from this herb, you know, make a ghost disappear? Or is it more of a placebo effect for the mind that you suddenly feel like you have something you can do?
Yeah, some control over this.
Right.
Yeah, so maybe this building and adding more stuff was, she felt like she had some, at least minimal control over how these apparitions are.
Be interesting to find out if the medium that gave her that reading was somehow tied to the contractors that continued to work on that house. Let's go east of the Rockies, Sandy, Waterford, Michigan. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you so much for taking my call.
Certainly.
I had a quick story and then a question. My story is, my father passed away, and during his wake and that, he came to me in a dream, and I was in my dream crying and upset and telling how much I love him and miss him since I wasn't able to say goodbye. His reply was, don't worry, I'm always with you. Just stand in front of the mirror and look behind you because I'm there. And then my question would be, I have a family member that's currently going for a PsyD, which is the human aspect of psychology. And he himself is like a precog and empath, and he knows all these things and had a sister that has grown up seeing, you know, dead people all her life. And like I said, he's going in for the PsyD. And my question is, when I ask him, you know all these things to be true, why, if a client comes in with all these and talks to you about this, what do you do? And he goes, well, I have to go by the DSM, which is the book, and follow whatever the protocol is, even though I know that, you know, the aspect of it is possibly real. So I guess my question to you would be, if you had a magical wand with all the media and stuff that's going on nowadays, what would you like to see done, or how would you think it might change? Because it's such a great need for individuals to be able to walk in and not be called tendencies or schizophrenia, but actually be listened to.
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm glad you asked that. So typically, any clinician who's trained in psychology or counseling or whatever, they go by the DSM, which you mentioned. The DSM is a book that goes over all the criteria for a diagnosis of mental health. So if you're diagnosed with depression, I can't just say, oh, you look depressed, I'll diagnose you. You have to meet certain criteria in the DSM. So a lot of times, if a patient is, if you're doing a consult on a patient or they're in your office, if they start mentioning hearing things that other people don't hear, seeing things such as ghosts and paranormal, and they do this on a consistent basis, that sometimes could fall under the classification or criteria for schizophrenia or schizoaffective disorder. So a lot of times clinicians will refer them for psychiatric eval, and, you know, it could, depending on what the psychiatrist says, it could go for medications and so forth and so on. But I think nowadays, if I had the magic wand like you talked about, I think things are moving a little bit more into a appreciating some of these paranormal experiences. There's actually a discipline called clinical parapsychology, which has gained a significant ground in the last 10 years. And what clinical parapsychology is it's sort of psychologists who are aware of parapsychological aspects, and rather than simply write them off as schizophrenic or crazy, they actually counsel the patient on these life-changing events that are happening or these phenomena that are happening. So if I wake up one morning from a dream and I see a plane going down and I see the numbers on it, and then the next day this actually happens, this is going to freak me out. This is going to be overwhelming. So, you know, you're going to need some support and some counseling through things like that. And that's where clinical parapsychology is coming into play. There's textbooks on it nowadays, and it's gaining more ground. So I think we're moving in the right direction in that case.
All right. Great point. Let's go to the next caller. We've got wild card line one, Charles in Elgin, Texas. Welcome to the show.
Hey there. Oh, wow. There's so many issues that this sort of popped up talking about clinical parapsychologists here. First of all, I'd like to know, where in the heck can you get a degree in clinical parapsychology? That'd be cool. But I studied psychology too in school, and I also worked in psychiatric hospitals and other places. But I've got some experience in that. It's all kind of a crime what they do to some people who really might have some kind of sort of parapsychological experience or something, and then they treat them with drugs instead. My question is more to do with the kind of the sort of earthbound spirits I'm just accepting these categories. We could get into the philosophical discussion.
Well, let's just get to the question. What's the question you have for him?
Of course. Let's just get to the question. I'm wondering sort of about where. You've got earthbound spirits, and then you've got the ones that have gone on to wherever they go to and then come back, you know, to talk to their relatives or whatever it is. And where does the energy – what theories do you have about a difference between the energies, you know, where they get their energy from if they're earthbound spirits versus you know, they've gone on and then come back? I mean, it seems to me there'd be a difference in, like, how they're obtaining their energy to manifest and do stuff.
Good question, Charles. Thanks for calling in. So what do you think earthbound spirits are doing to draw energy to manifest, as opposed, as he's saying, like the ones that have crossed over and come back? Do you believe those are different energies, different pathways that they're using?
You know, I'll be honest, and I say this, I don't know. I think when you look at earthbound spirits, from a lot of the people that I talk to in the paranormal field, what they usually say is they utilize energy from the environment to manifest themselves. So batteries, electricity, whatever the situation is. And then that's kind of where they get their power source from, if you want to call it a power source. I'm more the proponent of sort of people, like human dynamics, people picking up something in the environment, resonating with something in the environment that causes paranormal phenomenon and ghostly encounters, rather than it being an external thing like an earthbound spirit. But like I said before, these things, there's so many explanations for what's going on here. And I can even ask, I'll answer his other questions about clinical parapsychology. If you get a degree in some type of counseling or psychology, and licensed to practice, then you just get specialized in clinical parapsychology and just read things, and then you can probably do some of the. There's not like an actual degree for clinical parapsychology.
Marty emails in and says, Dave, it was Buddy Holly's wife who had the premonition. Richie Valens just happened to be on the same plane with Buddy Holly and the Big Bopper. So thank you for that. Let's see. I encounter the same thing when I try to seek explanations for UFOs. People seem to think I'm trying to explain away rather than find an explanation. That's true, right? When we're looking at these things and you're trying to come up with a rational idea. I don't think that's a bad thing. Everybody, you know, oh, you're just trying to crap on the paranormal and you're taking the... No, but it makes it so much more impactful when we can look at it logically. And if we can no longer find a logical explanation for these deals, then what we have left is really exciting.
Yeah. And I say it in the book, I say it numerous times in the book, I believe in paranormal phenomenon. I believe this stuff happens. You know, I am not a skeptic by any means. I think that we have to look at all the possible explanations out there. And sometimes it's not an earthbound spirit. Sometimes it has to do with people, telepathy, picking up stuff in the environment, imprint theory, those types of things. I think that's right. a viable research to look into.
And I agree.
I know people really just love the earthbound spirit, and that's what a majority of people, what a majority of people believe, and I understand that.
Here's another quick email, no name attached, but it says, if ghost experiences are largely subjective, not objective, what explains multiple witness events like the Flying Dutchman?
Yeah, the ones where their shared experiences are very challenging to explain away. How I would say it is, you know, you just have two people who are able to pick something up from the environment at the same time. You know, that's how I would explain it. I think those are very rare, those shared experiences. So paranormal phenomena are rare of themselves in a way. And then you get more rare. It's challenging to really study something like that.
I agree. And we're coming up against the top of the hour break. We didn't get through as many questions with our listeners as I would have liked, Brandon, but I thank you very much for being here with us and weighing in on the different perspectives. What, with the last minute we have together, what do you really hope people can get from your book and walk away with?
I just really hope people would look at the book and just understand that what the research is out there. And understand that there's new perspectives on what ghosts and hauntings and communications from the dead really are. And that's really what I want them to get from it. New perspectives, new ideas, fresh theories, a little bit more understanding of what happens with EMFs and electricity and ghostly encounters, and just sort of step outside the box a little bit. And I think we all have to keep an open mind, and that's for believers have to keep an open mind. Skeptics have to keep an open mind. Everyone has to keep an open mind. And that's really the genesis of writing this book.
All right. It's out. It's available. We'll have links up to that on the site. You can also go to darknessradio.com and click on our Killer Deals link. We have links to all the great books that we cover on Coast to Coast and on our show Beyond the Darkness. And you can find them all there, so you can have it all under one comprehensive roof if you like to read and you like to focus on this. And I'll also throw up a link to that free copy of the book about phantasms. Thank you so much, Brandon. Stay tuned when we come back. The Ghosts of Gettysburg, Richard Estep, my guest, next on Coast to Coast AM.